joining me. This is Ellen Kamai, the natural nurse. And we are right here with the natural nurse and Dr. Z. Well, today we are going to have as our guest Brenda Watson. And one of the things we'll be talking about is detoxification. And detoxification is an important topic, especially as we come out of the winter and head towards the spring. So that's something that I've been doing for many, many years. How I do detoxification is just once a year. And if someone is rather well and not having any kind of health issue, once a year is enough. But if someone is dealing with something such as arthritis, like we discuss in our book, Arthritis, the Alternative Medicine Definitive Guide, the very first treatment protocol that we initiate when someone would like to reverse is detoxification. So we're very happy to bring on board our guest, Brenda Watson, who has been specializing in this area for many years. And Brenda is a certified nutritional consultant and has dedicated her career to helping people achieve vibrant, lasting health through improved digestive function. She's a dynamic health advocate, and at many of the conferences where I lecture, she also does, probably at Expo West coming up this week, and where we both will be. And she is among the foremost authorities in America today on optimum nutrition, especially focusing on digestion and natural detoxification methods, which I mentioned earlier, as well as herbal internal cleansing. She's a very successful New York Times best-selling author of 7 books and continues to educate people about the digestive connection to total body health. Brenda's high energy, and she has a no-nonsense approach to body functions, and she is a popular presenter on PBS and a frequent health expert on national television. And today we have her on board right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. Thank you so much for joining us today, Brenda.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
Well, I just have to say that I love your name, and anyone would know that because my daughter's name is Brenda. So it's certainly one of my favorite.
That's
now,
great.
When going back in time, you have been doing helping people figure out about detoxification. And I just mentioned that in my book, Arthritis, the Alternative Medicine Definitive Guide, you know, people think there's ways around arthritis. The first 6 chapters are specifically about detoxification because that must be addressed and is completely ignored in mainstream medicine.
I know. You know, I go way back. My first, I guess you could say, entrance into natural health, personally, not as a practitioner, not as a counselor or anything like that, was personal. And I had had many health problems from childhood onward up into my 30s. You know, everything from migraine headaches, chronic fatigue syndrome, on and on up through high school, all the way through, you know, college, all the way into my 30s. And I never really did anything. I never knew anything about it. Until I walked into a health food store one day to pick up some books to read. And this was back in the 80s. So I started my personal journey with natural health in the 80s. And I was searching for ways to feel better. And I had a lot of, you know, chronic health problems.
Well, let me ask you this, friend. With those kinds of syndromes, which unfortunately is epidemic, you must have visited regular conventional physicians before you went on a quest to look elsewhere.
That's all I did.
And what kind of answers did you get from them, and what kind of testing was done? What I have seen is most people tell, well, everything's normal, you're fine.
That's exactly what
it was. And then they give you antidepressants.
Or they'll give me an antibiotic.
For no reason.
For no reason. Well, that's what happened originally. I was born in the 50s, so about that time, it was sort of the antibiotic revolution. I mean, I took antibiotics every time I stubbed my toe, even back then.
So
that's what ruined my health in the very beginning, before I was even in grade school.
Right. And you can't blame your parents because it was the parameter of the times.
It was. They didn't do anything wrong. That was something that was just, you know, that was the status quo. And so what happened is the compounding problems and going to traditional medicine, I'd go and they'd say, well, your tests are all normal. And I'm like, but I'm not normal.
You know, it's so amazing the amount of people, and to this day, 20 years later, or more than 20 years later, it's still happening.
Yep, I know. I hear it. Look, I hear it. I hear it every day. I have it in my office just this week. A girl who does yoga, she's pretty healthy, she had some chest pains, went to the emergency room. There says, nothing's wrong with you. She said, there's something wrong with me. Well, it happened to be one of her ribs was out, and it was a benign thing, you know what I mean, that got fixed. But she was so frustrated. And I said, welcome to America. Everybody's frustrated. That's why a lot of people are turning to natural solutions and beginning to explore, you know, their own bodies themselves. And that's what happened to me. I was sick and tired of being sick and tired. I walked into a natural product store and thought, I'm just going to change the way I eat and start reading some things, books. And, you know, I started with detoxification and cleansing. It just happened to be.
Now, how did you get to that? Because that's interesting to me. Now, first of all, let me ask you this. Were you put on antidepressants? Because very often people like yourself, who obviously know you're not feeling well, you're told you're depressed. Well, yeah, you're depressed because you can't function in life, but it's not that you're really suffering from depression.
Well, in 85 and 86, you know, that those years, there wasn't much in antidepressants that I remember. So I wasn't like, no, I didn't take any. So
they just told you, well, lady, you know, you're crazy and you're fine.
You've got chronic fatigue, or it's maybe your Epstein-Barr virus, and I'm like, okay, whatever. So that's when I walked into a health food store. Now, my first entrance into it, and I don't know if you remember him or not, he's been dead for a little while, was Dr. Bernard Jensen.
Oh, no, he was a very good friend of mine because I've been doing this since 1964.
Yes.
So we worked together for many years. He's marvelous, God bless him.
So
he's
I went
on the other side.
Yeah, I went to his workshops, studied with him, and began to do his, and you know, Ellen, his detoxification programs were quite rigorous in terms of, you know, you're juicing, you're drinking something every 2 or 3 hours.
Brushing, jumping on a rebounder, all of which are still good things to do.
Yeah, so that's what I started with. And then the next step for me was I began to do those types of programs, and then I started doing colonics some, and really, really got benefits by combining the detox with the colonics. And so anyway, that's how I got started. And in the early 90s, I live in the state of Florida, and we actually were licensed and certified and all that down here in a lot more than many other states. I became certified in colon therapy and nutritional counseling, and so I worked in a clinic for starting in 89, I worked in a clinic until, I had clinics until 97. So I worked in clinics and worked with a lot of the holistic MDs that were transitioning into alternative medicine. I was very fortunate, that I
worked. Let me ask you this question. After you found out that there is such a thing, which is an awakening for many people, like there might be another path to try, how exciting. But it does involve, like you pointed out, Brenda, and I do want to tell people that they can find you on your website, Beyond Tonight, which is BrendaWatson.com.
Right.
How long, like, it's a big step to change your whole diet. I mean, no doctor ever told you to do that. How long after you initiated some of these changes did you start to feel a glimmer of hope, like, wow, I do feel a little better?
You know, that's a great question, because I actually lecture on that sometimes, and I say it took me, I had peaks and valleys, and good days and bad days, and I think it took me all told really about a year, 6 months to a year before I really started saying that I had my health back.
Yes, that's all the way there. And you are so right to point that out. When you start changing your diet, especially giving up things like bread and sugar and muffins and things like that, which definitely is necessary, and fried food and junk food, you do sometimes feel worse for a while because there's a lot of addictive chemicals in that food.
Yes, absolutely. It takes a while. And, you know, I tell people it's not an overnight sensation. We've been so used to we think we take a pill and it's supposed to work on us the next day. And a lot of these people, Ellen, that you talk to, a lot of the people that are listening to the radio have chronic health challenges. And when you do, you've got to, you know, start slowly with, you know, biting off what you can. And it's a process, and I always tell people it's a process. But I do believe, my basic belief system is the food is the critical thing. It's 80% of the game, and the other part of it is some supplementation. But
and how about thoughts? How about thoughts? We can't forget about that, right?
Oh, thoughts, yes. With changing our mental images of ourselves and, you know, and getting into some type of mindful work, whether it's yoga or Pilates or walking or whatever it is.
Now, one thing that you shared, which is very interesting, is when you start these changes or use your detox program, which people can find out about at BrendaWatson.com, and it's that you've brought it into something that's more easily integrated into a mainstream life, which is such a gift. Now, like you said, you have to tell people that sometimes you might feel a little worse, but usually I have found within 2 weeks people start to have good days
that
they never had before, and that's the carrot dangling in front.
Yeah.
That is your goal, that you're going to eventually have more good days than bad days.
Exactly, and I can tell you that in 1992, I did my first lecture to the public on digestive health, particularly on constipation. And when I began to talk to people, Ellen, in 92 about cleansing, it was like it was a deer in the headlights sort of thing, you know, like, well, we can't, like, not eat. People also think cleansing is fasting. It's not that. It could be, but most of the time you're doing some fresh juices or you're still eating good, healthy food. And what I had to do was simplify it. And I had to simplify it because people have to work, and it's a busy life today. So that's why you're right. In the programs that we do now, we've got the program simplified. Like, they do things in the morning and at night, and in the day they drink their fluids and their health change into their healthy foods. And what the herbs do that a lot of people don't realize is they help support the liver and the lungs and the channels of elimination, the colon, the kidneys, and the bloodstream, because ultimately that's what we're trying to clean up is the blood, because that's what's feeding the cells, tissues, and organs of our body. So when you use herbals and fibers and things like that during your period of time you're detoxing, it just really strengthens the organs and the detox process.
Well, let's talk about some herbs in particular that mm-hmm. you have chosen to incorporate into your detoxification protocols. And, you know, what you say may be for the body, because I do look at your formulas, and you have some that might clean, like you said, the colon, some that might upregulate the P450 liver enzyme system, which controls the regulation of detoxification in the liver. And many people who have these chronic fatigue syndromes have a problem with that P450 regulation, and some of those herbs actually, when we look at their mechanism of action, upregulate that, which is so fabulous at supporting the body in its ability to break down toxins. And then you have some that are like lymphatic cleansers that help the lymph system wash these things out.
Yes, herbs, you know, are interesting. Choleretic is a term that to what you just said about the cytochrome P450 enzymes. What that does is, what people don't realize is they look at the liver like a conveyor belt. I like to use the analogy of the old I Love Lucy show. Remember with Remember when they had that segment on I Love Lucy with the chocolates going on the conveyor belt?
Everybody knows that.
Yeah, and the conveyor belt's going slow, and she's putting them in the box, and it speeds up, and she's putting them in her hat and her shirt and everything. Well, think of your liver like that. Think of everything coming in from your, you know, from your digestive system to your blood flow goes into the liver, and all of these chemicals, anything you eat, anything you take, an ibuprofen, any of these chemicals have to be processed by the liver. What happens is when the liver becomes sluggish, meaning it's not releasing these toxins through the gallbladder down to the gut, it begins to store them in the bile, the B-I-L-E, the bile becomes sluggish. And many of the herbs like blue purim and dandelion, these types of herbs are what's called choleretic, and that means they stimulate the bile to let go of the toxins and chemicals, flow them to the gallbladder, to the digestive system, and so that the liver doesn't become, actually, and that's one of the ways the liver becomes fatty, because the liver will typically store toxins and then surround it in fat. So some of these herbs are what's called choleretics, and they stimulate the liver to release this bile and make the bile flow more freely. A lot of them, some of the nutrients we use, like N-acetylcysteine and some of these, or milk thistle is a protectant for the liver, because, as you're right, Ellen, the liver is so important. And do you know, and I know you hear this, many people go, oh, our liver just cleans itself. And it
does.
Well,
it's supposed to. I mean, it is supposed to, but that's the problem. It gets, you know, that's a wonderful, I love that I Love Lucy thing. And another one that many people use is in terms of a pool filter. Because
yeah.
The pool filter is supposed to, you know, be self-cleansing also, but when the pool's been dirty, it gets filled. And once it gets filled, that stuff that's in there starts to dump into the water. So, well, yes, a normally functioning liver, if we live a perfect life and we're not inundated with toxins, should clean itself.
Yeah.
However, that's not the situation most people are in, and certainly not once someone has developed inflammation or chronic fatigue.
Right. Right, and all sorts of other, like you started off the show talking about arthritis, another perfect example. And the problem of the liver is that we really don't put enough focus, and I believe that the detoxification process, and not just during detoxification, but also, you know, making sure that during the year, if you're not detoxing, that you're giving the liver the nutrients it needs. And sometimes, you know, with, you know, taking your milk thistle or your N-acetylcysteine, which is a precursor to glutathione and helps glutathione, which is your main antioxidant in your liver that helps you detoxify. So what we do is we combine a combination of herbs with some of what we call the amino acids and things like you were talking about that helps phase one and phase two of the liver to function better.
Yes, they're so well thought out. And these are things that people can actually address even while they are going to work every day if they have a busy lifestyle. Now, what I do is tell people when, you know, of course they need to combine an eating plan with this. It's not just a matter of continuing down the path of eating junky food and bologna sandwiches and then doing some supplements.
Yes. You know, that is the whole crux. I deal with that every day, and I know you do too when you're just talking to people who are trying to get better. And just we've got to get across the message that the processed foods are just so bad for us. And getting into, you know, eating healthy with your fruits and vegetables, less of your sweeter fruits and lots of vegetables and any good lean, you know, quality protein, and getting away a lot from the, you know, the processed breads and pastas and things like that, because that's what's creating the obesity epidemic. And one of the things to, you know, kind of shift just for a moment, Ellen, is that's one of the things I'm trying to teach now is how to take carbohydrates and convert them into teaspoons of sugar so that people can look at a daily intake of food in terms of sugar in terms of teaspoons instead of grams, because people don't get grams.
Oh, that's really good, because you can visualize it more easily as a teaspoon. So let's take a little hold on that discussion. We're going to continue our discussion right here with eminent detoxification expert Brenda Watson, and you can find her at brendawatson.com. Right now we're going to take a little break, and we're going to listen to the Natural Medicine Chest. We'll be right back with more right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z.
On this edition of the Natural Medicine Chest, we'll discuss Sar sarsaparilla, or Smilax officinalis.
Sar sarsaparilla is a tropical plant which grows in South America, Mexico, and Guatemala. Although most Americans are familiar with it as a flavor enhancer for root beer, it has also been used for its beneficial properties for hundreds of years by many different cultures. In Roman times, the young shoots were eaten, and the mature vines were worn as garlands at festivals of Bacchus. According to ancient Roman writings, Sar sarsaparilla originated when the beautiful maiden, Smilax, was turned into a shrub after her love was slighted by the young crocus.
Sar sarsaparilla was brought to Europe in the 16th century by Spanish traders. A French physician, Nicolas Monardus, published a comprehensive account of Sar sarsaparilla as a treatment for syphilis in 1574. During Portuguese military operations in 1812, a British inspector general of hospitals noted its positive effect on syphilis patients. It has also been used in China for treatment of the same condition. Sar sarsaparilla was included in the United States Pharmacopeia until 1950 as a recommended treatment of secondary syphilis.
Sar sarsaparilla's medicinal action appears to be a result of binding bacterial endotoxins in the gut, thereby decreasing their absorption. This greatly reduces the stress on the liver and is likely responsible for its historic use as a tonic and blood purifier.
In a controlled study of 92 patients published in the New England Journal of Medicine in 1942, a chemically active component of Sar sarsaparilla called sarsaparin greatly improved psoriasis in 62% of the patients and resulted in complete clearance in 18%. Sar sarsaparilla is often recommended by naturopathic physicians for gout, arthritis, and psoriasis. Another folkloric use for Sar sarsaparilla is as a tonic for male sexual potency.
So, if you want a root beer flavored tea with a long history as a healthy tonic, reach for the Sar sarsaparilla in your natural medicine chest.
Right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z, which is one of the many fabulous shows you can listen to on Progressive Radio Network. And we air live every Tuesday, 10 to 11 a.m. Eastern Time. But if that's not a good time for you, you can catch us anytime on the archives, and that's prn.fm. Just go to archives, Natural Nurse. So there's lots of other shows that you can catch there as well. And we are very happy to have our listeners join us on many on-ground events where we're there in person. Next week, we will be going to the island of Jamaica, and that is a trip called Ancient Global Medicine, which offers 3 college credits through Stony Brook University, and also offers CEU credits for anyone who needs them. So that's an exciting trip. Pretty much filled. I believe we have one or two spaces left for that one. We actually go to Jamaica and live with the shamanic herbal bush doctors way up in the middle of nowhere. So there's no CVS there. There's no internet there. This is really an experience, and we've been doing this trip for 26 years. And very fun this year. We have more participants than ever before. So we know the interest in these kinds of things is growing. We also have a more local eco tour for cures, which will be right in Chinatown. And that's coming up on April 28th. So you can get in touch at Facebook, The Natural Nurse, or at naturalnurse.com to find out about any of these events that are happening. And we're so happy that you're joining us today with our guest, Brenda Watson. For more than 20 years, Brenda has dedicated her career to helping people achieve vibrant, lasting health through improved digestive function. And she is a dynamic health advocate, which I think you already have figured out if you've been listening, and is also considered an authority in America Today on optimal nutrition and digestion. You may have seen her on her PBS special. And Brenda, tell us how you came about to do that PBS special. I think that's fabulous because there you really get to the uninitiated. You know, do you ever notice that when people come to listen to you, you see the same faces, like they know you and they know this story? How about all the millions who have now seen you on PBS?
Well, that's interesting. What happened is in 2006, I'm on my fifth show now. In 2006, I live here in Florida in the Clearwater area on the West Coast, and I went to my local PBS station and said, I'd like to do a show about digestive problems because I feel like PBS has a listening audience of baby boomers, you know, and that's the kind of audience that has a lot of these issues. And I think at first, Ellen, they were like, are you kidding me? You know, but I had a book at that time called Gut Solutions. And so I spoke with them once, came back. Anyway, long story short, in 2006, I did a show called The Hope Formula. And that was extremely successful. And I followed that up with two more. And then in 2011, I came out with The Road to Perfect Health, which was really about the digestive system, probiotics, and chronic health conditions. And then in March of 2012, I filmed another one called The Heart of Perfect Health, which is about the relationship between the digestive system and really chronic disease, but cardiovascular disease in particular. And so this is my fifth show that came out actually in November, December of last year, and it's running in markets all over, you know, at various times across the United States now during the month, the first 2 weeks of March.
And isn't that excellent? Because it brings your message, like I said, to mainstream America. Because very often when we lecture at these conferences, and I'm sure you'll probably be at Expo West this coming week. I'm headed there right after our show. But who comes to those are mostly people already interested in this topic.
Right.
While the television venues give you access to people who this is brand new information. So I think that's so fabulous for them to find that there is hope for health in seeing you on a PBS special.
Yeah, it does. It is reaching the awareness. You know, interestingly enough, the whole concept of, you know, the leaky gut and all that that you and I've known about for 20 years is just now reaching some level of awareness in mass America. So being able to, what I do in the show is give people visuals with animations, and that's a really good way of, you know, them being able to, I'm a very visual teacher really because I'm a visual learner, and so I really like doing it through visualization on television.
Now, when you talk about leaky gut, let's discuss that for a minute, because while that particular term is more of a lay person's term, it's not used medically, but there is a corresponding term which is called tight junctures.
Right, intestinal permeability.
Exactly, and that is completely verified in mainstream medical literature, completely
mm-hmm.
verified, and
mm-hmm.
yet totally ignored by, let's say, rheumatologists or even gastrointestinal specialists.
Yep, yep. As a matter of fact, it's amazing. I work with a traditional GI doctor here because of, we can do another show on it sometime, fecal transplants. But anyway, and he's very open to probiotics, and he does fecal transplants now, which has now been, you know, in the New England Journal of Medicine in treating Crohn's and ulcerative colitis. But when I say the term leaky gut to him, he just freaks out. He just cannot, like, he's like, that is just not a term. And I said, well, it's intestinal permeability, but he still can't get it.
Okay, well, can he get intestinal permeability? Because if you do a PubMed search on that, you can pull up 10 million studies.
No, but the point is, yes, leaky gut is a layperson term. It does, I think, communicate to a person better what's going on inside their digestive system a little bit instead of intestinal permeability, even though I clarify it with that. And
it's really exactly what's going on, and that's what leads to inflammation. What
mm-hmm.
happens is large molecules slip through the cracks
mm-hmm.
of the intestinal tract and get into the blood, where they are recognized by the white blood cells and other immune support cells as invaders, and
right.
then they go after those. Well, that causes hidden internal inflammation,
right.
which you talk about a lot in your new book on heart health.
Mm-hmm.
So it's both bad for the digestive system, it's bad for the heart, it's bad for diabetes, and it can lead to cancer. So across the board, it's such an important concept to address.
Right. And I think that in the way that we do it, it's simple and people get it. And I think, you know what, and the other thing, I call it silent inflammation in the show, but I think one of the things that, and this is kind of not maybe a great thing, but one of the things that's helped people, I think, understand it a little bit is that something is silent inflammation is the emergence of statin medication. You know, when you look at statin medication, which is, you know, given to lower cholesterol, and we know that statin medication really lowers inflammation. And so I think 5 years ago, I would not have been able to communicate a message like this to the general public and had a response like, you know, we're having now. But because of the people having that some level of awareness on it, they're now able to respond to this and take this information in, that the gut is where, you know, the problem can start when it's out of balance, unhealthy, you're eating the wrong foods, you don't have enough probiotics.
Okay, so this is important. You are now listing bullet points. Let's have the listeners listen carefully. That creates the situation of a leaky gut. And
right.
that's very important. So give us that list again, Brenda.
Well, what happens is, first of all, the gut becomes inflamed. And how does that happen? It happens because of many different reasons. It could be too many antibiotics. It could be too much of the wrong foods like sugar. It can be too many of the wrong drugs and things like just over-the-counters like NSAIDs or ibuprofen, things
like
that.
Well, let's stop there 1 second, because those non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs, like you said, both over-the-counter and prescription, are given for inflammation, and yet they make inflammation worse over time.
Exactly. Your onslaught, I think we have 18 million Americans on acid-blocking medication long-term. So these things strip away the friendly bacteria, which if you look at the average person, we have 100 trillion bacteria cells in our gut. And if you want a visual on that, it's the weight of a brick. So, and the majority of that bacteria in general should be friendly. So 80% of it should be friendly. Well, what happens with the list I gave you, it strips away this friendly bacteria. And so, therefore, the cells on the lining of your gut, your digestive system, your lining, your cells that line your gut, that protect it from the bloodstream, wear away or become inflamed. So it's like this. It's like the screen on the window of a house. When your screen is intact and healthy, it allows the air to come into your house, and it keeps the bugs and dirt out. But when the screen has holes in it, it's no longer a barrier. So what happens is, like you said earlier, Ellen, large molecules of undigested food, toxins, enter the bloodstream, and your immune system responds to that. And over time, different things happen. Some people develop autoimmune because of it, and other people go the way of the itis, you know.
That's such an excellent visual. I've never heard that one before, and I love it, Brenda.
Thank you.
With the screen. That
yes.
is great, because everybody knows that's true, and that really is exactly what's going on.
Right. That's
so
exactly
then, of course, if you think the bug's coming in the house, then you get in an uproar, right?
Right.
Because then you go get the bug spray and
yeah.
spray it in your house, and that makes it more toxic, and it,
yeah.
it causes this downward spiral.
And what I see, Ellen, because I do a lot of stool testing, I do.
Now, how do you do that? Why don't all doctors do that? How do you do it?
Well, I do it, of course, through the labs. You know, I usually use doctor's data or one
mm-hmm.
of your alternative doctors will use it. But I do it because I get hundreds of people writing me with a lot of problems, and I can't begin to help them unless I can kind of see what's going on in their gut. So there's something called a comprehensive stool analysis. And what this stool analysis tells you is how much of the friendly bacteria is in your digestive system, what could be pathogenic or negative, do you have an overgrowth of yeast, how are you digesting your protein, starches, and fats, is there undigested food in the stool, and the other big piece that it tells you is your immune system. Is your immune system upregulated or is it downregulated? Because like I said earlier, some people, you know, their immune system becomes on fire. You know what I mean? You're swatting the bugs inside
right.
the house. But many times what happens is the immune system then becomes so overstimulated and confused that it doesn't really know what is what. And that happens over a period of time to some people. And then the immune system just stops responding.
Right. It becomes dysregulated.
It becomes dysregulated. So what I do with a lot of people, and I've looked at in a lot of, I mean, I've looked at hundreds of stool analyses over the years. And I'm pretty good at being able to see when, you know, and of course the labs are great because it also tests for parasites and things like that. But I can tell you that in many cases, like you were saying earlier in the show, people with chronic fatigue syndrome, for example, I've worked with people with chronic fatigue syndrome who have parasites. And any doctor that they went to, well, this person and people I've worked with have been to 10 doctors, and they just kept saying, well, we don't know what's wrong with you. But then we run a stool analysis, and we can say, wow, okay, you don't have any friendly bacteria levels that are decent. You have an overgrowth of yeast. You've got some type of microscopic parasite, and your immune system is upregulated, you know, and you've got you know, you're not digesting your foods or whatever. So these tests that I've looked at over the years has really given me the groundwork for being able to kind of know about the gut and leaky gut. And I do give tests for leaky gut, which is a drink you can drink, and you know that. But
I know it, but let's explain that to our listeners, because I think that's an underused analytical technique, that when we look at the risk-benefit ratio, there's very little risk to doing that test, unlike mm-hmm. other conventional tests, and you get a huge amount of information.
Right. Well, it's a test where you drink a drink with lactulose and mannitol, and if your gut is like the screen on the window of your house, it's a fine mesh screen, it's healthy, those molecules will not pass through. So what you do is you drink something and then you collect urine. And if those molecules are in your urine, they know you have leaky gut. It's really simple.
It is, and there's no real downside to doing it. It should be done in any patient where there's difficulty diagnosing.
Right. Exactly.
Right. So you find out all this very specific information that no physician, unless they went to an alternative physician, as you said, has ever investigated.
Well, and you know something, too, Ellen, I find, and I'm very hesitant sometimes to refer unless I know a physician, even in the alternative world, is going to do some of the gut testing. Because I find sometimes that even with a lot of it, that if you don't look at some aspect of the gut, like with a stool test or with a leaky gut test, or there's a urine test that tests things, but I just think if you don't do something to look at the gut, that, you know, and you're going into a doctor for specific, like, I don't know, whether it's chronic fatigue or, you know, arthritis or rheumatoid or whatever, that I think that they can miss the boat too.
Right, and especially if they're not even looking there, for sure.
No.
Now, we're going to take another little break right here and allow the other wonderful shows that are here on Progressive Radio Network to let you know about them. And when we come back, we will be continuing our discussion with Brenda Watson, and you can find out more at BrendaWatson.com. We'll be right back with more on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. Thank you so much for joining us today right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. And I'm your host, Ellen Kamai, The Natural Nurse. You can find us at www.naturalnurse.com on the web, or Facebook, The Natural Nurse on Facebook. And we do get back to you and answer your questions. And our guest today is Brenda Watson. And Brenda has dedicated her career to helping people achieve vibrant, lasting health through improved digestive function. And she is a dynamic health advocate and is among the foremost authorities in America today on optimal nutrition and digestion, natural detoxification, and herbal internal cleansing. We've been talking today about a host of topics, including the inflammatory response and how it's linked to so many different health issues. So, Brenda, why don't we come back and talk about your interesting information about heart health. I know you're doing your special on PBS right now with a focus on the heart of perfect health. How does that link into what we've been talking about in terms of digestive health?
Well, as we said earlier, silent inflammation starts from the gut because things leak into the gut, macromolecules leak into the gut and circulate through the body and create inflammatory processes. Some people rheumatoid, some people Alzheimer's, but in the case of heart disease, that's the process that begins to happen whenever, you know, whenever it also inflames the arteries. So inflammation, which creates heart disease. You know, it's really interesting. I'm going to tell you a story that in the book, I interviewed a cardiologist, Dr. Bill Davis, who does the Wheat Belly book, and I interviewed a heart surgeon, Dr. Lundberg, out of Phoenix, and he was one of the very first doctors to do open heart surgery way back when they started, and he said when he used to open up, you know, do heart surgery, he would notice that noticed that the inside of the artery was red and inflamed, like it had a sunburn. And I said to him, oh, my goodness, that's exactly the analogy I've used in the gut, that we have an inner sunburn when we have leaky gut. So what happens is we have these, you know, small particles, LDL particles, that enter into the heart and over time create coronary artery disease.
Yeah, so it's back to the culprit. Being inflammation. And you know what I think? This is my theory. and be interested in your take on it. And actually, this is what Bernard Jensen talked about a lot, that there's no specific diseases. Conventional medicine's focus on having a name, of course you need a name if you want to bill it to health insurance because it's got to match the code. That's really the only use for it. But I really feel that all of this inflammatory response, that's where genetics come in. Genetics come in where it will manifest in an individual.
Absolutely.
Because in their weak area, be it the cardiovascular system, the digestive system, something like diabetes or the development of cancer, where the oncogenes are turned on by the inflammation and turned off, by the way, very specifically and measurably, by eating right, like by eating cabbage, for instance,
right,
can actually turn off oncogenes. So that regardless of what your issue is, it's linked back to this very important inflammatory response that you talk about.
Right, and that's exactly what happens. And one of the things I do in the show is I say, okay, if you have these markers, high cholesterol, high blood pressure, high blood sugar, and not even high blood sugar, you don't even have to be diabetic, you know what I mean? But if your blood sugar's, fasting blood sugar's staying over 85, they've looked at 17,000 people, and if it stays over 85 long-term, you're going to set yourself up for heart disease. These are markers. These three markers are an indicator that you already have silent inflammation. Because cholesterol, as you well know, rises because of the inflammation. It's a marker saying, hey, something's going on. Cholesterol's your helper. It's going to try to go to where the inflammation is and help. And the reason it rises is because there's silent inflammation. So I try to get that point across that if you have the, and visceral fat is the other one, there's four, that if you have these, then you have the silent inflammation and you're well on your way to, whether you're developing heart disease, you're well on your way to developing some kind of chronic illness wherever you're genetically weak. And you're right. We've labeled everything to death. We have labelitis in this country, and we label everything. And the biggest feeder of this is the sugar epidemic.
Let's go into that, because I know that's something you are really strong about. I know you share a little secret formula, and it's a formula that our listeners could use to figure out how much sugar you're really eating daily.
Okay, so if you take 7 liters of blood, it takes 1 teaspoon of sugar to stay stable in a day, I mean at any given time. And over a day, the average person needs about 8 to 10 teaspoons of sugar to be normal. Now that, Ellen, is in all the foods they're eating, their fruits and their vegetables, plus any added sugar. So it's a given that soda or cookies or candy bars are on top of that. That's added sugar. So if you take the average person, I take meal plans and show them, they're averaging, Americans average between 37 teaspoons a day, and on a poor diet with a lot of fast food, about 86 to 100.
Wow.
Now, where does a lot of this come from? We know that a lot of it can come from soda, but what I'm trying to explain to people and get them to understand is a lot of it's coming from the garbage carbohydrates that they're not looking at as sugar. And as you know, carbohydrates turn to sugar in the body. So, for example, I give this formula. If you take a box and it says on the side of the box, let's just take pasta, for example. It gives you a serving size, which in an average pasta box, it's 2 ounces, which, as you know, no one eats 2 ounces of pasta. It's barely enough to fit in your hand. And 2 ounces of pasta, if you read the box, will have about 43 carb grams, 3 grams of fiber, and it'll say on the box, Ellen, 2 grams of sugar. Well, when you look at that, you think, wow, well, that's not much sugar. But when you take the carbs, divide minus the fiber from it, so that would be 40. 43 minus 3 would be 40. Divide it by 5. That's how many teaspoons of sugar is in a serving of that pasta, which is 8.
So you're saying that there's a lot, besides what they claim as sugar, within that carb, there.
Yes.
Now, why is that? Why can they claim only the 2 grams of sugar when actually you're saying there's something like, 8 plus 2, which would be 10 grams of sugar.
There's 8 teaspoons. Converting it to teaspoons,
okay.
So you can count the teaspoons. Here's what, this is really interesting. The last year when I was doing the show, there was an article in Wall Street Journal about this very thing, that Americans aren't looking at the sugar in the carbs they're eating. Okay, because they don't understand carb grams. And what the Wall Street Journal was saying is that we need to push the food companies, and they think it within the next 5 years, they'll have to put teaspoons of sugar on the box of processed foods. So, for example, what I do is I give people in the book, I give them the list of how much sugar is in a serving of any fruit or vegetable they want to eat, okay? So if it's, I don't know, if it's, you know, blackberries, blueberries, so they can count from their fruit and vegetable list how many teaspoons of sugar is in the foods that they're eating that day. And then I have a list of all the foods so they can convert everything to teaspoons. The formula converts carbs to teaspoons. Do you see what I mean?
Yes, that's very helpful.
And I've watched people not only lose weight, but cholesterol levels go from 500 down to 172 with no medication.
That's just, well, that's what you're supposed to do with no medication. But this puts the emphasis on self-determination. You have to become an avid label reader.
Right, but it's very simple, the formula. You can look at a box, minus the fiber, divide it by 5, and that's how many teaspoons of sugar. But
so
really,
we also include, what about the 2 grams of sugar? That
forget
was
that. That's worthless. It doesn't
Don't
mean
even
anything.
Pay attention to that.
Mm-mm.
So just
Mm-mm.
go to the carbs,
mm-hmm.
look at the fiber.
Minus it.
Subtract the fiber from the carbs, mm-hmm. and divide the carbs by 5.
And you get the teaspoons of sugar in a serving of that food.
Oh, I'm going to try that myself.
Good.
And that's going to be called the servings of sugar. And then if you want to add in the other 2 grams, that's, you know, very small, but you could. And
well,
you might find, even with pasta, that different brands come out with different amounts.
Oh, they do. They will. If you've got maybe, a little bit more of a fiber in it, it'll change it. But you would be surprised. I mean, you would be surprised. Like when I started, years ago, I started working with my husband on this because he had such high cholesterol.
Yeah, probably your worst patient.
Yeah, you better believe it. 10 years.
Anyway, guess what, Brenda? I'm sorry, but we are actually coming to the end. It was such a fascinating discussion, and thank you so much for joining us.
You're
welcome.
And
I'd
welcome.
Like you to give, you know, your parting wisdom to our listeners, along with your website.
I just want people to be their own health advocate. I want them to really know that they can empower themselves by just learning. And if you go to BrendaWatson.com, we'll help you all we can.
Yes, and you have a fabulous blog there with very interesting questions and all kinds of information, because I've been looking at BrendaWatson.com during our show. So I want to thank you so much for being our guest today on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. And also I'd like to thank you listeners for tuning in every Tuesday, 10 to 11 a.m., right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. And we so much appreciate your emails and your posts on The Natural Nurse at Facebook. And we'd love to remind you, until next time, to please stay healthy.